Chapter 40. Endeavoring to put into a good humor. Presently entering the tea, he seats himself on the mats as composedly as a juggler about to perform his sleight of hand tricks, and with the chiefs disposed in a circle around him, commences his ceremony. In the first place he gives Mo Archua an affectionate hug, then caressingly lays him to his breast, and, finally, whispers something in his ear, the rest of the company listening eagerly for a reply. But the baby god is deaf or dumb, perhaps both, for never a word does he utter. At last Collery speaks a little louder, and soon growing angry, comes boldly out with what he has to say, and bawls to him. He put me in mind of a choleric fellow, who, after trying in vain to communicate a secret to a deaf man, all at once flies into a passion, and screams it out, so that everyone may hear. Still Mo Archua remains as quiet as ever, and Collery, seemingly losing his temper, fetches him a box over the head, strips him of his tappa and red cloth, and laying him in a state of nudity in a little trough, covers him from sight. At this proceeding all present loudly applaud, and signify their approval, by uttering the adjective matarchy with violent emphasis. Collery, however, is so desirous his conduct should meet with unqualified approbation, that he inquires of each individual separately, whether under existing circumstances he has not done perfectly right in shutting up Mo Archua. The invariable response is yes, repeated over again and again in a manner which ought to quiet the scruples of the most conscientious. After a few moments Collery brings forth his doll again, and while arraying it very carefully in the tappa and red cloth, alternately fondles and chides it. The toilet being completed, he once more speaks to it aloud. The whole company hereupon show the greatest interest, while the priest holding Mo Archua to his ear interprets to them what he pretends the god is confidentially communicating to him. Some items intelligence appear to tickle all present amazingly, for one claps his hands in a rapture, another shouts with merriment, and a third leaps to his feet, and capers about like a madman. What under the sun Mo Archua on these occasions had to say to Collery I never could find out, but I could not help thinking that the former showed a sad want of spirit in being disciplined into making those disclosures, which at first he seemed bent on withholding. Whether the priest honestly interpreted what he believed the divinity said to him, or whether he was not all the while guilty of a vile humbug, I shall not presume to decide. At any rate, whatever as coming from the god was imparted to those present seemed to be generally of a complimentary nature, a fact which illustrates the sagacity of Collery, or else the time-serving disposition of this hardly used deity. Mo Archua having nothing more to say, his bearer goes to nursing him again, in which occupation, however, he is soon interrupted by a question put by one of the warriors to the god. Collery hereupon snatches it up to his ear again, and after listening attentively, once more officiates as the organ of communication. A multitude of questions and answers having passed between the parties, much to the satisfaction of those who propose them, the god is put tenderly to bed in the trough, and the whole company unite in a long chant, led off by Collery. This ended, the ceremony is over. The chiefs rise to their feet in high good humor, and my lord archbishop, after chatting a while, and regaling himself with a whiff or two from a pipe of tobacco, tucks the canoe under his arm and marches off with it. The whole of these proceedings were like those of a parcel of children playing with dolls and baby houses. For a youngster scarcely 10 inches high, and with so few early advantages as he doubtless had had, Mo Archua was certainly a precocious little fellow, if he really said all that was imputed to him. But for what reason this poor devil of a deity, thus cuffed about, cajoled, and shut up in a box, was held in greater estimation than the full-grown and dignified personages of the taboo groves, I cannot divine. and yet Mehevi, and other chiefs of unquestionable veracity, to say nothing of the primate himself, assured me over and over again that Moa Archua was the tutelary deity of Typee, and was more to be held in honor than a whole battalion of the clumsy idols in the Hula Hula grounds. Cori, who seemed to have devoted considerable attention to the study of theology, as he knew the names of all the graven images in the valley, and often repeated them over to me, likewise entertained some rather enlarged ideas with regard to the character and pretensions of Moa Archua. He once gave me to understand, with a gesture there was no misconceiving, that if he, Moa Archua, were so minded he could cause a coconut tree to sprout out of his, Cori's, head, and that it would be the easiest thing in life for him, Moa Archua, to take the whole island of Nukuhiva in his mouth, and dive down to the bottom of the sea with it. But in sober seriousness, I hardly knew what to make of the religion of the valley. There was nothing that so much perplexed the illustrious cook, in his intercourse with the South Sea Islanders, as their sacred rites. Although this prince of navigators was in many instances assisted by interpreters, in the prosecution of his researches, he still frankly acknowledges that he was at a loss to obtain anything like a clear insight into the puzzling arcana of their faith. A similar admission has been made by other eminent voyagers. By Carteret, Byron, Kotzebue, and Vancouver. For my own part, although hardly a day passed while I remained upon the island that I did not witness some religious ceremony or other, it was very much like seeing a parcel of Freemasons making secret signs to each other. I saw everything, but could comprehend nothing. On the whole, I am inclined to believe that the islanders in the Pacific have no fixed and definite ideas, whatever on the subject of religion. I am persuaded that Collery himself would be effectually posed were he called upon to draw up the articles of his faith, and pronounce the creed by which he hoped to be saved. In truth, the Typees, so far as their actions evince, submitted to no laws human or divine, always excepting the thrice mysterious taboo. The independent electors of the valley were not to be browbeaten by chiefs, priests, idol or devils. As for the luckless idols, they received more hard knocks than supplications. I do not wonder that some of them looked so grim, and stood so bolt upright, as if fearful of looking to the right or the left lest they should give anyone offense. The fact is, they had to carry themselves pretty straight, apostrophe or suffer the consequences. Their worshippers were such a precious set of fickle-minded and irreverent heathens, that there was no telling when they might topple one of them over, break it to pieces, and making a fire with it on the very altar itself, fall to roasting the offerings of breadfruit, and at them in spite of its teeth. And how little reverence these unfortunate deities were held by the natives, was on one occasion most convincingly proved to me. Walking with Cori through the deepest recesses of the groves, I perceived a curious-looking image, about 6 feet in height, which originally had been placed upright against a low pi-pi, surmounted by a ruinous bamboo temple, but having become fatigued and weak in the knees, was now carelessly leaning against it. The idol was partly concealed by the foliage of a tree which stood near, and whose leafy boughs drooped over the pile of stones, as if to protect the root fane from the decay to which it was rapidly hastening. The image itself was nothing more than a grotesquely shaped log, carved in the likeness of a portly naked man with the arms clasped over the head, the jaws thrown wide apart, and its thick shapeless legs bowed into an arch. It was much decayed. The lower part was overgrown with a bright silky moss. Thin spears of grass sprouted from the distended mouth, and fringed the outline of the head and arms. His godship had literally attained a green old age. All its prominent points were bruised and battered, or entirely rotted away. The nose had taken its departure, and from the general appearance of the head it might have been supposed that the wooden divinity, in despair at the neglect of its worshippers, had been trying to beat its own brains out against the surrounding trees. I drew near to inspect more closely this strange object of idolatry, but halted reverently at the distance of 2 or 3 paces, out of regard to the religious prejudices of my valet. As soon, however, as Cory perceived that I was in one of my inquiring, scientific moods, to my astonishment, he sprang to the side of the idol, and pushing it away from the stones against which it rested, endeavored to make it stand upon its legs. But the divinity had lost the use of them altogether, and while Cory was trying to prop it up, placing a stick between it and the pie, the monster fell clumsily to the ground, and would have infallibly have broken its neck had not Cory providentially broken its fall, by receiving its whole weight on his own half-crushed back. I never saw the honest fellow in such a rage before. He leaped furiously to his feet, and seizing the stick, began beating the poor image. Every moment or two pausing and talking to it in the most violent manner, as if upbraiding it for the accident. When his indignation had subsided a little, he whirled the idol about most profanely, so as to give me an opportunity of examining it on all sides. I am quite sure I never should have presumed to have taken such liberties with the god myself, and I was not a little shocked at Cory's impiety. This anecdote speaks for itself. When one of the inferior order of natives could show such contempt for a venerable and decrepit god of the groves, what the state of religion must be among the people in general is easy to be imagined. In truth, I regard the Typees as a backslidden generation. They are sunk in religious sloth and require a spiritual revival. A long prosperity of breadfruit and coconuts has rendered them remiss in the performance of their higher obligations. The wood rot malady is spreading among the idols. The fruit upon their altars is becoming offensive. The temples themselves need rethatching. The tattooed clergy are altogether too light-hearted and lazy, and their flocks are going astray. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.